Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. My friend the Scarecrow just got a promotion. She's outstanding in her field. I just heard that today. I stole that from a bank. That's a bank joke. And I'm glad you're with me, because I'd be thrown into traumanoptia if I had to breathe while you told me you missed today's show. Courageous communication. Marianne Dersch says your nonprofit may be codependent and it's stifling your communications. Are you afraid to stand out? Do you prefer middle-of-the-road content to driving on the sidewalk occasionally? She may be right. She's the author of the book, Courageous Communication. On Tony's Take Two, insider yet? We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant. By Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Telos, turning credit card processing into your passive revenue stream, Tony.ma/TonyTelos. And by Text to Give, mobile donations made easy. Text NPR to 444-999. What a pleasure to welcome Marianne Dersch to the studio from St. Louis. She is founder of Courageous Communication. She works with nonprofits to move from operating out of fear and scarcity to confidence and abundance, so they attract like-minded donors and raise more money. She's author of the book, Courageous Communication, How Codependence is Making Your Nonprofit Brand Boring and What to Do About It. Marianne has a shoe fetish, a Diet Coke fetish, and she sings karaoke, which I call karaoke. You'll find her, her company, her book, and her fetishes at MarianneDersch.com, and she's at Marianne Dersch. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. We're going to talk about Coke and shoes and all kinds of things. thank you for coming in from St. Louis.
Thank you. I'm glad I made it.
Yes. You were 7 hours delayed yesterday.
Yes.
You got a lot of purple going on.
Yes.
Purple hair, lips, nails.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just going to embody my brand.
That's you. Yes. Embrace it. Embrace
yes,
it.
Right.
Embody
yes.
it. Absolutely.
Live the brand.
For sure. Yes. You got to be courageous. So, okay. Codependence. You feel that organizations may be a little codependent, and you want them to move away from that to courage.
Yes, and I actually thought of this concept in the therapist's office when we were talking about codependence, which the simple definition is when you subvert your needs for the needs of others, right? So you're not doing what's right for you, because you're too busy doing what's right for others. Mm. And so it's that way that we can't be kind, giving people. It's just when we are subverting our needs, which builds resentment, right, in our personal lives. So I was looking at that as an organizational issue. I'm thinking, wow, a lot of my clients are subverting their needs for the needs of their donors, right? So they are not doing and saying what would be right because they're afraid of what someone might think. Right? So it's always, they're focusing on the loss, not the win. So that's when you talked about moving from fear and scarcity. So that is a lot of that idea is like, if we say or do something wrong, something bad's going to happen. We have to speak or act this certain way because we want to appeal to, you know, this group of people. And that's usually around money.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
You're a therapist.
No.
You have a background? No.
I was in therapy.
Oh, just go to therapy. I go too.
I have a team of mental health professionals who guide me through my life.
Excellent. my actual therapist actually just told me I should cut back to, we can go back to 5 days a week now. So I'm improved after 18 years.
Right.
Things are getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what is this courageous communication? And, you know, of course, we have the hour.
Right.
So don't go into detail, but just give us an overview. What is this courageous communication?
So courageous communication is about not worrying about the people who don't like you, but focusing on the like-minded folks who share your heart and your mission and attracting them to you. So that is the simplest explanation. Don't worry about the critics. Focus on the folks who have an affinity for what you do.
Okay. Okay. You also encourage needing less praise. Don't be so needy.
So the idea is...
I love all the purple on you. It's amazing. she puts her hands together while she's talking. And her hands are flailing by her lips. And it's amazing. The whole ensemble.
Yes.
Ensemble.
So, right. So praise and criticism. So again, one day I'm in my therapist's office, and I was talking about how someone had made a criticism, and because I'm, oh, Marian, you're always in the spotlight or something, and then where other people would praise me for that same like skill or, you know, and tendency. And she said, well, Marian, that's just other people's opinions of you, and it shouldn't, and it, they're both the same thing. Praise and criticism are the same. They're just other people's opinions of you. And I'm like, okay, well, that's ridiculous, because praise feels really good and criticism feels really bad. And she said, a whole person really can manage praise and criticism, right? So you don't need praise to feel good, and criticism doesn't derail you. Although one feels good and one hurts, you're still going to be a whole person, like moving your way through your life. And at that moment, I thought, oh my gosh, my clients are overly dependent on praise and terrified of criticism. And even if you meet people like that in person who are like very needy for praise, they're kind of exhausting, right? And then it forms this sense of inauthenticity. So relationships are formed with people, and organizations are made of people, and we want to have an authentic relationship. And so when we need a lot of praise and are terrified of criticism, of course we send these messages that seem inauthentic, right? And we're afraid to like show the true truth of like who we are and what our organization is.
Yeah.
And so we think that super shiny, perfect image is what attracts people, but that doesn't attract people. What attracts people is the realness. Like they want to know who you really are and how they can help you with your struggles and the wins and the losses and all of that. Just like we want to know from each other.
You say have a point of view.
Right.
Don't be ashamed of that.
Right. Right.
And people who have a similar point of view will be attracted to you.
Yes.
And those who do not will criticize or depart. And that's not bad.
Yes.
Because you want more of the people who share your point of view and fewer of the people who don't.
Exactly.
You don't call yourself this, but you're like, I'm doing it for you. You're the nonprofit therapist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, you're encouraging this like cognitive behavioral scheme for nonprofits.
Right. To use it at an organizational level.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Be strong. You say, you know, this is another thing you say in the book. Be strong. Be strong in your message and easy to find.
Right. So because the idea is to create a brand of attraction to attract like-minded people. And so if those people see that you're standing up for the causes and the issues that they have an affinity for, that's going to attract them to you. And then when you're easy to find, that helps you attract those people. So if I have, you know, a desire to help a certain cause or issue and I'm looking for that, I can find someone who does that and then build a relationship with that organization.
Okay. We're going to take our first break.
Okay.
Then I want to say that when we come back, we're going to talk about how this is all very personal to you. Not only the therapy, but some other things going on that are interesting and a little provocative, I'd say.
I will bear my soul.
Yeah, well, you do in the book. So you can read the book for detail, or you can hang out here and get the Cliff Notes version. Well, not really Cliff Notes. I mean, we're on for an hour. That's not Cliff Notes.
Right.
Get the audio version. That's what I mean to say. This is the audio version of her book. Pursuant. They have a new free ebook, which is The Art of First Impressions. Do you need more donors? The Art of First Impressions ebook is about donor acquisition. It has the 6 guiding principles of an effective acquisition strategy. It has how to identify your unique value and use it to attract people, like Marianne and I are talking about, plus creative tips. You'll get it at tony.ma/pursuant. Capital P for please. Remember that. All right, let's go back to creative communications. So you're a burlesque dancer. you're unashamed about the shoes, the platform shoes that
yes,
you love.
Yes. Yes.
So you are, you know, you are, maybe there's other things.
Uh-huh.
You're out there and you're attracting people
uh-huh.
who are similarly minded.
Yes.
And you're not upset when people are, I guess, put off.
I don't know if people are put off.
Oh, everybody's attracted? The whole world is attracted? I don't know.
I guess
not get carried away.
Right.
But you're out there for your own, in your own brand. You're practicing what you are
yes,
preaching.
Yes. And my company too is built on the same principles of a brand of attraction, right? And really connecting with like-minded organizations. And so it's less about worrying about trying to convince people, you know, it's hard to change what's in people's hearts, right? We all have our philanthropic heart. We all have what's in our hearts. So what's in my heart and who I am And so it's hard to convince people of the worth of your organization. It's hard to convince people. I look for like-minded people, right? And in your work, you probably do too.
I publish a podcast.
Right.
Produce a podcast, and people who enjoy it will come to it.
Yes. And so it's this idea of working less to convince people of your worth and just attracting the like-minded people to you.
Tell me about the burlesque. How does that fit
into your life? I'm in what I call a midlife adventure. So
not a crisis.
No. Why not would it? No, there's nothing to be crazy about.
I've never heard of a midlife adventure.
Well, that's what I call it.
Okay.
I'm 53. I just turned 53. So, and I just decided that.
How many women do you know who are so out about their age? I mean, I love that.
Why would I?
Because I don't know why, but lots of women are coy about age.
Yeah. Okay. So
Marianne is 53. She didn't catch it. 53. Marianne Dersch, 53.
That's when you're supposed to say, okay. Oh my God, you look great.
In case you didn't hear it, she's 53.
You look amazing. You That's
look
what fabulous. You're supposed
you look
to
like
say,
you're
42. Right? Okay. Thanks. So I just decided that I was feeling really confident. Like, I think women in their 50s, it's a really great time. And you feel like really confident. Like, I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm doing what I want. It's sometimes I call it like your second act, like after the kids are a little older and whatever, and you can go do. And I just decided, you know, this idea of feeling really confident about your body and your sexuality and who you are. And in burlesque, the beautiful thing about it is like everybody is welcome and everybody is beautiful, right? So big bodies, little bodies, we celebrate our curves and jiggles. There's trans bodies, you know, there's one of the guys in my classes did burlesque and drag. So like any person you are is worthy of celebration. And so, and a lot of times women, we get the message to like, you know, like whatever you are is not good enough, right? You have to like put yourself in here and wrap yourself up, right? You know what I mean? There's something about you that is unappealing. So in burlesque, it's sort of like this idea of owning yourself, but also I did it for sort of command of myself and the stage. So as a speaker and trainer, you know, having command of your brain and your body, like in front of people, right?
Yes. So you chose burlesque for that. I chose improv and stand-up comedy.
But it's a lot of the same skills, right? And understanding, like being in the moment, like being really in the moment and really selling something, right? And so, and it's this idea of, even though I was like terrified in my head, you know, I went out and went, you just let go and just have fun. And that feeling of that intersection of fear and exhilaration.
Yes, that's stand-up comedy.
It is such a great feeling. And you know that, right? The stand-up and the
improv.
You walk
on stage doing stand-up. The applause is over. It's your audience. Are you going to make them laugh?
Right.
Or are you going to be embarrassed?
Exactly.
You got 8 minutes. Go.
And you just dive in. And it's really about just being so present in that moment. And so that was the fun for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for sharing. 53. Marianne's 53. I love that. I love how bold you are about it. Okay. So let's talk about some communications.
Cool.
A little more brand promises. You want us to have a. Is it just one? We have a brand. An organization should have a brand promise or
one
multiple?
Brand promise.
One brand promise.
Yes.
What's a brand promise?
Brand promise is the highest level of thinking, the highest level of experience. So a brand promise is a promise that you make to everyone your organization interacts with. And it's not always stated, but it's felt. So I use the example of like a Target, because everyone's been to Target, right? Yeah, and you know what it feels like. And they, you know, their brand promise, even though they don't say it, is like, you're going to have a good experience here. You know, like for some women, like Target's a recreational activity, right? Where you like walk around with our carts.
And bring kids.
Yeah. You push the kids around. When my oldest child, when we adopted my oldest child, like, and I was a nervous mom to a 3-year-old, you know, I would just go through Target because I like Target, you know? So it's this idea of that promise that we make to everyone we interact with. And then once we figure out what that is, then that can distill into all our messaging and our talking points and how our organization looks and feels.
How is this? Well, all right. So brand promise. So, I was going to say, how is it different than a vision? But the vision is what you're trying to achieve.
Yes, yes.
This is your brand.
This is
promise.
about what you're going to get when you interact with us. So yeah. So I'll give you an example.
Okay,
so
please,
there's a national organization called Oasis that works with older adults, and they do recreation activities, volunteer, educational. So as people are, you know, nearing retirement, you know, finding the free time in their life, okay, now I'm going to really pursue my own interests or do what I want. You know, you would turn to Oasis for further education, for volunteer opportunities, okay. Exercise, right? And so when we looked at them and we said, what are we really promising people? And it was this idea of a young at heart, right? So being young and vital and feeling like life is full of promises, like no matter what age you are. And so when we created that young at heart brand promise.
That's their brand promise?
Yeah. So then okay. It's like, okay, now we're going to look at, okay, their main message, which then became Oasis Lifelong Adventure. Because so here's the thing. No one wants to have a label. Nobody likes labels. Like millennials don't want to be called millennials, right? Seniors don't want to be called seniors. Like people don't like labels, right? And so we couldn't say for seniors or, you know, so it was this idea of implying lifelong, which is throughout life, and adventure. But the brand promise was really this idea of staying vital. And so when we looked at the color, the photography, you know, how the organization looked and felt, how people interacted with that organization in person and in print online, did that keep that promise, right? Okay. So once you have that, that's sort of this feeling that just works its way through everything you do. And sometimes it's like so known, it's just it's a thing that people don't really talk about. It's just obvious and evident. But it's always good to define what it is, because then you can really look and say, are we communicating that? You know, are we keeping that promise every interaction that we have?
So that was lifelong adventure.
Yeah, this was Oasis. That well, the brand promise was it was this idea of being young at heart, which led us to the tagline, like lifelong adventure.
Okay. Like your midlife adventure.
Exactly.
You like adventures. You recommend adventures to clients. You have your own life. You have your midlife adventure.
Yes. All right. So.
Okay.
I hadn't drawn that parallel till you just said that. Yes. So.
Well, this is why you come to Nonprofit Radio for enlightenment. This is why 13,000.
Yes.
No, it's enlightenment.
You can be a part
Real-time.
Of my mental health team.
Real-time. Organic. Oh, no. Is there a fee? You can't afford me. You know, I can't afford my therapy 5 days a week now. But okay. I don't know where I'm going with that. But all right. So you have the brand promise, and then you have belief statements.
Okay. Yes.
They seem to segue from.
Okay. So, yes.
From from the brand promise.
So this came about because a lot of people would say to me, so I want to appeal to this group. So, what appealing to this group may mean like hurting the feelings of this group, and we're not sure what to say, you know, and how to keep all these, you know, different groups, you know, from not offending anyone. And so I was at a workshop and this woman said to me, you know, I work with, women's health and some of the women in the group are that this organization serves are pro-life and some of them are pro-choice. And there's always a, you know, and it's this constant battle.
Yeah.
Okay. So in their head, there's a battle, right? So it's like, so these belief statements then allow us to say, here's what our organization believes. Here's what we stand for. And these are 5 to 7 principles that we just don't move off of, right? And so one of those belief statements could be we work to include all, you know, points of view around, you know, this issue. I said, you just state that you're trying to do that, right? So that's a belief that you have. A belief that she had was we're doing our best to accommodate the most diverse, you know, points of view possible around this issue.
But isn't that contrary to courageous communication, what we said earlier about not being fearful of offending some people?
So you're not, it's not that you're offending, you're trying to make space for both these groups that were part of this organization. So it's this idea of like, yeah, and we might fall down on that every once in a while, but we're doing our best to accommodate everyone.
So this is not an organization that has to take a stand on abortion.
Right.
Whether the organization is
pro-choice or pro-life. This is an organization that was working in maternal health, maternal health. So there's room and saying there's room for, and we're doing our best. So one of the organizations I worked with in St. Louis is called Episcopal City Mission, and they serve kids in juvenile court custody. And so the idea of why are kids in court custody? What have they done? And they minister to them. It's called they call it a ministry of presence. So they mm-hmm. minister to the kids, they're mentors and ministers to them. And so this idea of creating these belief statements for them allowed them to say, here's what we believe about the children that we serve, and it also allowed them to talk about the religious foundation around that. Because then this is what we believe. We believe that no child is should be defined by the worst thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you hear things like that, you're like, oh, okay. And no one can argue with what you believe. This is just what we believe. And if it's not for you, that's okay. So and it's a very freeing way, because this is what we believe. And if something comes to in conflict with that, then yeah. you know, well, that's this is something we just don't
outside
move off
our
of.
Beliefs, right.
Yeah.
How do you develop a belief statement? Are you Italian? You talk with your hands as I do.
I'm Polish. I'm Polish. Okay. Right. We say you can't talk with your hands strapped down.
Yeah,
right?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, I've used
that's why
time.
I like to have Zoom meetings. When I explain concepts, a lot of times I use my hands, you know, to describe things. So
okay.
All right. So
Developing. How do you, within your organization, how do you develop these
okay,
belief
so,
statements?
So most of them are known but not said. So
yeah, how do you get them in writing?
Right,
we
exactly.
Need the executive director, CEO, who do we
yeah,
need?
Yeah, so.
Board?
Yes. So okay. So it just really depends on the organization. So we asked people. So when we asked people, like, what do you believe? You know, what do you
what people did you ask?
The organization, staff and board.
Okay.
And then from there we distilled it down. So we got a lot of input and then distilled it down into like 5 or 7 things.
Okay.
So, but when I'm working with an organization, I'm hearing them as I go. So I'm sort of like already taking a mental inventory, you know, and listening to what they are, because a lot of times they're just known and they're not written. And this one of my clients, that it's called they call it the values, their value statement. It's belief statement, value statement. I mean, you can call it different words, it's still the same thing. Here's the unassailable things that we believe,
that we stand for.
Right. And then we're working on putting them like in a very prominent, like when you walk in, like, here's what we believe, which I think is wonderful, right? Because it just grounds everybody into that.
Okay. And we don't stray from these. So if we're going to embark on courageous communication, courageously, yes, we're going to have to change some culture, some thinking within the organization.
Right.
Because most organizations are middle of the road. You know, they're safer. We're not going to, for the reasons that we talked about, you know, they don't want to be provocative in their communication.
Yes.
Maybe not take a stand or take a weaker stand. So how are we going to get change? You have some ideas in the book about changing culture to make this shift.
Correct. So nonprofit culture is fundamentally risk averse.
Yes.
I think the board structure is the board structure, like their mission would be like, let's not ruin this, right?
We know that. Yeah, so yeah, we know the problem.
I've been on the boards before. It's like, please don't let this organization die under my watch.
Don't ruin this.
Right. Like, thou shalt do no harm.
What
right.
What are
you
going to do?
So the idea is to switch from this idea of fear and scarcity. So I'm constantly scanning and thinking about what could go wrong, to thinking about what could go right. So an idea of living in confidence and abundance. And so how that happens is really from, I work with organizations on all levels. So I can't just create cultural change through one person. So what I was doing before was like, I can teach you how to write better web content, or I can teach you how to have a more engaging brand. But if you don't have the culture that supports that, that's not going to work. So typically it's working with, board and executive director, at that level, to embrace this idea of that you're going to go a lot farther, a lot faster, and achieve more success when we adopt the principles of abundance, right? And so, and it's calling to the front. So here's when we did take a risk and it paid off, right? So because I I think organizations are doing this already. They're just not giving themselves credit for it. So a lot of times it's just like helping them understand you're kind of already doing this. We're just going to do this in a way that's really deliberate. And the idea of and showing them the numbers of you know, how it takes a lot of time and a lot of money to convince people of something than create like finding those like-minded people and attracting them to you. And it's about relieving yourself of not casting that really wide net of having to appeal to everyone, you know, because like, what if we miss this dollar? What if we miss this dollar? You know what?
But I know, I understand that.
Yeah.
But I want to get to that, the how to.
Okay.
So one of the things, well, first I want to remind listeners, we had a show called Buy-In Bitches. There were two women who talked about getting buy-in. That was around IT and technology projects.
Yeah.
But you can listen back to that show because they had a lot of good ideas that go beyond just tech projects.
Cool.
For getting buy-in from your boss, from your CEO, et cetera. Uh-huh. So Buy-In Bitches.
Okay.
I'm sure if you go to TonyMartinetti.com and you search the word bitches, that show will make itself a pound.
I like those ladies already.
Yeah. That's right. You would. I love them too. And we did that on the show. It was organic. We need to come up with a name. And one of them said, well, it could be buy-in. And I said, we need an alliteration. And she was close. And then I said, bitches.
Really? You did that just
I think so. Oh, it was definitely on the show. Oh, definitely real time. I forget whether she said it hesitantly or I said it boldly. I don't know. But yes, it was
love
organic.
It.
But you also, you touched on something that you say in the book. Share the successes. Share small successes.
Yeah.
When your new form, your new brand of communication does well, you get retweeted or you get special attention on Instagram or something.
Right.
Share it.
And share it with especially the board. Like show them how this is working. Give them the data to support this. Because they're typically data driven.
Okay. So I want with the getting this buy-in, you're also encouraging us to understand what the board's motivations are.
Correct.
Well, say a little about that.
So, like I said, the board's motivation is typically to not mess up, but they also the board members really care deeply about what's happening. And so when you can understand like what they want to contribute, what's in their specific mind, and then pull that out of them, then once they can increase their buy-in, increase their emotional impact into the organization, then we can really work with them on taking those risks and coming with us. For me, I come from a communications background. I was on a board and it was a lot of lawyers and accountants. And I was wondering like, you know, how do I fit in here? You know, what is my gifts? And the organization is Foster Adoptive Care Coalition. They're my client now.
The organization is what?
Foster and Adoptive Care Coalition. Okay. And I stepped down so that they could be my client. One of the things that we did is like these monthly or yearly meetings where we met one-on-one, the staff and board, to talk about what our goals were and then how they could contribute to those. And I think that's really helpful.
Another thing you suggest is be patient, take small steps.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you have
like a minute or so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you just said it. Just, you know, transforming a culture takes time and it takes takes deliberate action every day. And so that's why those successes are so important. So people can start to see the transformation and not say, oh, it's been a month. And then, you know, let's move off. And this takes some time to really become part of your culture and just how people act and think every day.
Okay. We got to take that break. Wegner CPAs. They're kicking off a remote nonprofit roundtable series. Each quarter, a Wegner's CPA will cover a topic that they know intimately, detailed, and you need a basic understanding. That's all you're going to get in an hour. This is not a CPA, CLE, CPA credit course. You need a basic understanding of it. Their latest is revenue recognition for grants and contracts. You watch the archive video at WegnerCPAs.com. Click resources, then webinars. Now time for Tony's Take Two. Are you an insider yet? I'm pushing this because what do you get as an insider? Exclusive content. So today with Marianne, we're going to peruse her shoes, her platform boots that she's got. You'll see the purple. We're shooting extra content, videos, short, like 5 minutes videos with each guest. And insiders get that on a private playlist. Now, some podcasters might charge you for that. You got to pay $5 a month or something, or whatever, maybe $7-$8 a month or something. No, not nonprofit radio. No, no charge. I just want you to be an insider. So you go to TonyMartinetti.com and you click the insider alerts button. That's it. It's prominent. And you'll be an insider. Just name and email. That's it. That's all I ask. You'll be an insider and then you'll get the access to these exclusive videos that I'm doing with guests and including you're going to see Marianne's boots. All right. Let's go back to Marianne Dersch and Courageous Communication. All right.
You okay.
You right?
Yes.
All right.
Of course. It's my favorite thing.
You're not tense, are you?
No.
Okay, good. You're just sitting up straight. Okay, good. Okay. All right. So that was the cult. So we talked about the culture change. Culture change. Listening. Listening. You like discovery sessions and focus groups. So what's the first, before we get to the discovery sessions of focus groups, mm-hmm. How does a listening exercise fit into courageous communications?
Okay. So when we listen to, so courageous communication is not just saying or doing whatever you want, right? For the purpose of doing it.
Yeah.
So when we listen, this is when we find consensus points in thinking that help us build and develop our messaging and our brand so that everyone who's part of it feels excited to share it. And so, you know, when I just want to make that clear, because when we talk about being a courageous communicator, that means that you're speaking your organization's authentic truth. Right. And how we get to that is by listening. So, what do we value as an organization? And then how can we present that in a way that feels authentic to us? And that, but then is also exciting and engaging for those like-minded people that we want to attract.
Okay.
And that's where the discovery sessions and the focus groups come in.
So who are we listening to?
So I've used this cool tool called discovery sessions for many, many years. And it's different. So typically a focus group, you would say, here's a couple of ideas we're thinking about. Can you give us some feedback around these specific ideas, right? A discovery session is more of an open-ended conversation where you're asking people how they think and feel about an organization, what attracted.
Who are you asking?
I'm going to get to that.
Don't hold out on nonprofit radio listeners. I'm going to hold your feet
I would
to the fire.
Never.
Platform boots and all. I'm holding your feet to the fire.
So what we would do is create a cross-section of people. So board, staff, volunteers, clients, creating a cross section in the room. Now, sometimes I would do it where an organization would want different discovery sessions based on audience, and then it was up to us to kind of synthesize the information. Mm-hmm. But most of the times, like that was a longer process and a more involved and expensive process than they wanted. So we would take maybe 12 to 15 people, put them in a room. Board, staff, like I said, you can do volunteers, clients, those people that are really close to your organization. They don't even have to know a lot about it, just have an affinity for it. And so sometimes people would come in the room and they would say, well, I just joined the board. I don't know very much. It's not about what you know. It's like, what you feel. What you
right?
feel.
That's
right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Why do you come? Why did you join the board?
So and in the book, I really lay this out step by step on how to do this, but we're going to ask questions like, so, you know, tell me.
You got to get the book. Just get the book.
Right. What three words come to mind, you know, when you think about us? Like, what do you think that we do that's different or better? Because that's what we're looking for, like our positioning, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, what attracted you? What would you tell people to, you know, who you think might be attracted to this organization?
What would you tell people about the organization?
Right. So that's for two reasons, because we're planting something in their mind that, you know, hey, you should tell people about this. And if you did, what would you say?
Yeah.
And what we're looking for, as I said, is our consensus points and thinking. So when we do these, I have people write first and then speak, and they write first so that, like, if you and I were at opposite ends of the room and I heard, you know, everyone had the same thing to say, by the time it got down to
that's
you,
constrain your thinking.
Yeah, right.
Oh, everybody said everybody, my stuff
so
already.
I'm just going to not say that, because then I don't. So we look at consensus points
you
and
write
thinking.
Down first. And then you had to read what you wrote down.
Exactly. Okay. And it's a very strengths-based conversation. Strengths-based. So you're looking for what assets you have that you can present. And then how can you use those assets to connect with like-minded people? So I just did this recently for a group that was starting their first sort of like big planned giving effort. And so we had people. Your wheelhouse.
I know things.
Was the idea of, you know, these were people who had been longtime donors and volunteers. So they were really the top prospects for this.
Yeah.
But before we wanted to ask them formally, we were asking them, hey, how did you become involved? Like, what is your affinity? You know, what do you want your legacy to be? You know, and so most philanthropy is born of pain, right? Like, so there is a pain that I had in my life that I want to prevent other people from happening, right? So, so the pain of, you know, my parents, you know, were unemployed for a long stretch of time, and something like that, right? And so when you're asking people what you want their legacy to be, you know, what change do you want to see in the world? You know, then you can really understand like what their goals are. And so when we did these discovery sessions, we got so much information, and not just around the planned giving, but just around who they were as people. and what their goals were in life, and how could an organization support that person in many ways, right?
Okay.
So and it's always, we always get great stuff out of them, and people leave feeling really good. Like, wow, that was a great use of my time.
Oh,
like,
this is a very good donor engagement.
Yeah.
Even board engagement exercise.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So then what do you do with the synthesis of all this?
Right. So
just, where does it go?
Yeah, sure. So before you start, we usually have what we want out of it on the back end anyway. So if we're looking for messaging, branding, something like that. So we're going to know at the front end what we want out of the back end.
Yeah.
Sometimes people say, like, this has happened so many times. People would say stuff in the room and that would become their tagline. You know, but I can't say that in the room, right?
But you catch it.
Yeah, because I'm listening and scanning for.
Well, you have the trained ear.
Yes.
And you know what the purpose of the meeting is.
Yeah. And we're just creating a space for them to really express their thoughts around the organization and around their goals for their own.
This would be very, very informative, I think, to CEOs. To full boards.
Yeah.
You know, this synthesis, even beyond the product, whatever it is you're looking for, messaging or your promises or whatever. It's very informative, I think, for leadership.
It is. And it's also when you listen first and then develop later, then we say to them, hey, you know, because of what you said, because of the guidance you gave, here's what we created, or here's the direction we went.
They see the impact.
They see the impact. So it's, we don't make decisions in the room, and we make that very clear up front. Like, this is not decision making. We're not making a focus group. Yeah, you make one, a poll, or make a decision, or you know, get at least some priorities out of that. But this is about just this idea of, hey, let's talk. Let's create this very specific space to talk about your thoughts around our organization. Okay. And then we can use that then to help our decision-making, you know, as staff.
As I said, that strikes me as outstanding engagement.
Yes.
For whatever constituency you're bringing in. Volunteers, clients.
Yes.
You said, all the board, donors, planned giving donors. I get a shout out, planned giving donors.
Yes, that's right.
They're often forgotten. You know that?
They are.
I'm the evangelist without the religious overtones for planned giving at my clients, because it's often the forgotten group. You know, there's no recognition society for planned giving. You have $1,000, $5,000, $50,000 recognition, nothing for planned giving. People who put you alongside their grandchildren and children in their will.
Their life legacy to you.
You can't throw them a recognition group. Come on. What are you? I mean, I'm not.
I hear you.
But I make the point. Let's take a break. And then, when we come back, then we're going to talk about the authentic personality. Because I feel like the info that you would gain from the discovery sessions and the focus groups leads to your unique personality and authentic personality, pardon me. And that's important to know, to learn. Telos, can you use more money? You need a new revenue source. You want to diversify revenue. You get a long stream of passive revenue when companies you refer process their credit card transactions through Telos. In fact, you get 50% of the fee that Telos earns. It goes on for months and years with the credit card transactions. You watch the video, then send potential companies to watch it. Where do you get it? It's on the listener landing page at tony.ma/TonyTelos for the video. We got to do the live listener love. The live love. It's going out. It's going out to Ottawa, Canada. See, I don't like the way New York is. Ottawa. No. Ottawa. Ottawa, Canada. Welcome. Shanghai. Oh, awesome. Shanghai, China. Ni hao. Shanghai. Not Shanghai. I don't like that Shanghai. Shanghai. Ni hao. Brooklyn, New York. I don't like that. It's Brooklyn, New York. That's the way they would say Shanghai in Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York. New York, New York. Multiple. Live love. All of you. All of you. I'm just going down the list. We're not. Sometimes I go domestic and then abroad. We're doing it all in the way Sam wrote it down. Rio Cuarto, Argentina. Would that be Buenos Tardes? Buenos Tardes, Argentina. Rio Cuarto. Live love to you. Garza Garcia, Mexico. Buenos Tardes. Moscow, Russia. Guten Tag. No, that's German. Moscow, Russia. Live love out to you. Middle Village, New York. That's Long Island. Middle Village. Cool. Charlotte, North Carolina. Live love. Special love going out in North Carolina, of course. Tampa, Florida. Adelanto, California. Live love to each of you, our live listeners. And there's more out there, but some are masked, guarded. I don't know why, but there's more live love going out to those masked, guarded people if I didn't shout you out. And the podcast pleasantries. The over 13,000 listening in the time shift, pleasantries to you. Whatever you're doing, you're painting your house, you're washing your car, are you doing the dishes? Is it your podcast binge day on a Sunday evening or something? No, Sunday evenings are for email, so it has to be Sunday afternoon. Podcast binging, wherever, whenever you're listening, pleasantries to the to that huge podcast audience. I'm grateful that you're with us. Thank you. Let's go back to Marianne Dersch. How does that sound?
Great.
Okay, cool. So what did I say we were going to do? Your authentic self,
mm-hmm.
authentic personality.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. All right, flesh this out. What do we got here? Oh, you have a quote. I want to read the quote
okay.
from
okay.
the first.
Okay.
Frame this a little bit. Page 84. When you get the book, you'll see it. Page 84. The more honest and authentic you are in your communications, the more you'll attract like-minded people. I said, we've been talking around that. That's,
right.
That's like, to me, that was sort of like a thesis.
Yes.
Of a theme running through the whole book.
Uh-huh.
But okay. But so now we're going to talk about your authentic personality.
Okay.
What's this about?
So as an organization.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we've talked about your personality.
Yeah.
I'm the center of the universe, so you can't be. Also, the universe only have one center. That's me. So let's move it
Dang
off
it.
You now. Shifting away.
Right.
Spotlight is moving now to your clients and nonprofit organizations who are listening.
Yes.
Okay. Marianne
Dersch, 53. So it's this idea of your organization just really being who they are. So if you're grassrootsy, that's okay. If you're older and more established, that's okay. When you try to present yourself as something you're not, just like people are going to get that.
Oh, that. See right through it.
Yeah. So I was meeting with a woman that I've known for a long time, and she now manages donor-advised funds. And she said, Marianne, it's my job to get below the gloss, the brochure gloss, into what's really going on in an organization. And I said, Melinda, it's my job not to have the gloss that you can really see right into an organization, yeah. that they're excited to present that to you and that they feel confident, you know, in who they are. And so one of the ways that you do that is, you know, celebrating successes, but then also being really honest about your struggles.
Yeah.
Do we want to and
failures? Call it if it's a failure,
right? And I in the book I cite the Engineers Without Borders in Canada. They always do this failure. Their annual report is their failure report. The top 10 ways we failed, and yeah. I'm like, okay,
oh boy,
that's a really confident. Yeah, but they're talking about here's the lessons we learned. And in nonprofit, I think we're not allowed to fail. Like we think, you know, and as again,
yeah, we
that
gotta overcome that
part of that risk averse culture.
Risk. If you're going to take a risk, if you're going to be bold and courageous, you're going to fail sometimes.
Right. And here's what we learned from that. And here's how that helped us grow. And so that's ideal of the good and the bad. And that's what people want to know and they want to connect to. You know, in St. Louis, I foster dogs, right? So that's one of the things that we do.
You foster dogs and you adopt children.
Too. I adopt, yes. Yeah. I am a rescuer by nature.
Wow. Yes.
So,
yes.
And there's
flush that out with the therapist, do you?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So there's several organizations that sort of do a lot of the same, the kind of the same thing, right? So they're all working in animal welfare, yes.
You
right?
Can tell she used her hand.
Sorry, that's okay. They're all working in animal welfare, but each of them has a distinct personality, right? And so one the organization that I work for, they're a little bit gritty and rebellious. The other one is a lot more folksy, community based. The other one is like older, established. They work on higher level like advocacy and overarching like statewide initiatives.
You're in the streets, you're doing the work, you're rescuing the dogs.
Right. And so but each has their own personality.
You're not in Jefferson City.
Yes.
Jefferson City, Missouri.
Yes.
Capital of Missouri. Well, hardly known for
right.
Jeff so, City. I lived in Warrensburg for 5 years. I was in the Air Force in Warrensburg.
Really?
Right in Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, but each one has their own distinct personality, and that's okay. And so when you're looking, so if I have an affinity towards animals, I can look and I can understand like the landscape
and which one
I'm attracted to.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just sort of like owning that, like, you know, hey, you know, this is who we are and this is what we're about. And if you like that, that's great. And if you don't, that's okay too. You know, we're happy that you got to know us. And that's a hard place for people to be.
Sorry. A little too effusive with the hands.
Sorry. Okay. I'm going to keep it on the chairs now. Okay.
We're on a shoestring budget here at Talk Radio. okay. So leading to this is, you've alluded to this a bunch of times. You want to take stock, inventory, what it is that's holding you back, what your fears are.
Yes.
Okay. We haven't talked about this yet. So
yeah.
let's flesh this out because if you're going to be courageous in your communications, there are going to be worries, fears, we're going to lose donors, we're going to lose volunteers, the mayor isn't going to like us anymore, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you got to take stock, right? And then, go ahead, you flesh it out.
Yeah, so it's important to inventory your fears because the concern isn't going to go away. So when the benefit outweighs the concern, then you'll move forward. So what I mean by that is, when you're going to have concerns and fears through this whole process, but we're working towards something greater. So we just need to learn what our concerns are and then make a plan to address them.
Because board members are going to say,
oh my God, what if this happens?
The mayor's not gonna like
okay.
Us
okay. Yeah. So what if that does happen? So let's make a plan to address that.
Okay.
So people like plans because it helps them, you know, feel safe and like, okay, so if we're going to do this thing and so what if somebody does criticize us?
Well,
what do we do?
Okay.
And then once we have a lot of times, you know, remember when nonprofits were hesitant to get on social media because they were afraid of a negative comment,
yes,
right?
Yes, Facebook.
What if somebody says something?
Right? Yeah.
Okay, well, what if somebody does say something?
Yeah.
How do we manage that?
Okay.
And so because crisis PR to me is just something that happens. Not every day is a huge crisis, but it's just you're going to. It's the price of doing business. If you're doing and saying something interesting, somebody's not going to like it, and that's okay. But the people who do like it are the ones we're concerned about. And so it's this idea of, okay, what if somebody doesn't like it? Then how can we address that? And there are, you know, times when I've worked with groups where we really just said, okay, what are all our concerns? And we put them on the whiteboard and we addressed each one with some strategies to address each thing. What if this happened? Okay, this is what we would do.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. And benefits as well. You want to take stock of the benefits.
Right. So the idea is to attach to, and the thing is like, you could have 100 fears, but if you have one benefit, right, you're going to work past those fears. And so the idea is, okay, as a group, understanding what do we really want for our organization? How, you know, what is it that it's really want going to move us forward? And then once we agree to that, right, and then so now we know how to get to that.
Yeah.
Okay, now this is this concerns, and we're just going to manage these as we go.
With a plan for each one.
With a plan for each one. Because what happens right now is we're making decisions based in fear, right? And so let's make decisions based in rational thought, right? Here's what's best for our organization. Here's the most efficient way to get what we need or whatever it is, instead of, oh no, we can't do that. That's too something,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
So the idea is, yeah, I get that that's scary, but let's make decisions based in the rational thought, and then just be mindful that there's going to be concerns popping up.
You say in the book, fears don't predict the future.
Yeah, right. I'm not a mind reader. I wish I could be. I tell my kids that too. Just because you think it's all going to go wrong, it's not, that doesn't mean it is. Right. So, and the idea is like this idea of being in abundance, of scanning the scene for the what good could happen, instead of constantly scanning the scene for what could go wrong. And I, that's,
and I'm working toward the good.
Right. And that's a mindset that you know, I work for every day as my, you know, as a person, and that I, that, and you know, I work with organizations too. Right. Yeah. So we're going to look at the world as a place of abundance and opportunity instead of fear and scarcity.
You got to take our last break. Text to give. Can you use more money? Need a new revenue source? Diversify revenue. Here's a second way. Mobile giving. You can learn about it with Text to Give's five-part email mini course. You'll get five emails over 5 days, just like my therapy. I could do my therapy in this way. It'd be a lot cheaper too, I'm sure. Five emails away. Yes. So what do you do to get the five email mini course from Text to Give? You text NPR for Nonprofit Radio and November Papa Romeo, Air Force Days, Whiteman Air Force Base, Warrensburg, Missouri, Jefferson City is the capital. Text NPR to 444-999. All right, and we've got several more minutes left for Courageous Communications. So staff expertise. You have a chapter on developing, right, on creating, developing staff expertise.
Yes.
Talk about it, please.
So,
did you take a picture of me?
Yes.
You did? Oh, thank you.
You know, right.
We're going to shoot a video. So
I know. It's exciting.
Video, so. It's going to be on Zoom. You love Zoom.
I do.
Yes, we're going to do a Zoom. Okay.
Okay. So staff. Okay. So I learned a phrase a couple weeks ago, and it's, if it's not my genius, it's not my job. And I think that applies.
Oh, that's bad.
That applies really well here.
That's bad, isn't it? Isn't it bad?
Why is that bad?
Because then you have to be excellent at everything,
but no, you're not.
It's not possible.
That's right.
You can't be a genius at everything.
Right. So you learned
that from your therapist, didn't you? Did you say that in the book?
No, I learned that I was on an SEO a workshop last.
It's okay to be average at some things.
Yes.
That wasn't your therapist who taught you that?
Yes. Yes. It's okay to be just okay, which is still like completely unacceptable to me, but I'm working on that.
I know more about your therapy than you do.
So a lot of times organizations will get bogged down in what I call they think they're fundraising, or they think they're relationship building because they're, you know, putting together a newsletter or, you know, an annual report. When I work with folks on that there's only one you, there's only one Tony, there's only one Marianne, one of my clients,
thank
Larry,
the
there's only,
anyway.
Right. There's only one Larry or Galen or the folks that I work with. And so only you can build those relationships. There's a lot of people who could do other things in your office, like, you know, the newsletters, the social media, that could update the content of your website or something like that. But there's only one you. So when you are bogged down in this, either two things. One is you're kind of bogged down in it because you're expected to do all the relationship building and fundraising, and then you're expected to do all of the, you know, design and development of marketing materials and social media, or you're doing those things because you're a little hesitant to do the relationship building, right?
Yeah, that's bad.
So sometimes people get into fundraising positions and they really, that relationship building isn't their forte.
Right.
And, you know, they fall into these positions.
And then they can find administrative things to occupy their time, and then they wonder why they didn't meet their money and meeting goals and their moves goals by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Because they're not comfortable doing it.
Yes.
So they found distractions.
Yes. So, and nonprofits tend to value money and not time. So they say, well, we're going to watch every dollar, but we have plenty of time, right? So we can have all the time. So we're going to work people really long hours, and then because we're going to keep all that in-house. Well, we could do that here. We could do that in-house. And what that does is it you know, yeah, you are saving money by not sending that out, but the money that you're losing because if their genius is relationship building, let them build relationships, because then they're going to be generating the income, you know, and then offloading some of those duties that anyone, you look at this and say, and I'm not saying like all too, because like, you know, at my old company, 501 Creative, I worked with a very awesome team of designers and developers. So I'm not saying anyone could do anything. I'm just saying, what is your genius, right? What is your gift and art? And is that your primary focus of your job is practicing those gifts? Because in the end, that is going to move your organization farther.
You also make a point of saying, if you don't have expertise in-house, you're going to have to spend the money to buy it. Freelance, right. Consulting.
Yeah.
Any of the sites that match or potential volunteers.
Yes.
But you got to get the expertise you don't have that you need.
Yeah. And you know, so you could learn how to build a website, but then you're never going to replicate
There's
that.
There's no point. Don't, right? Don't spend your time.
So bring Drupal those people in, have them help you and boost you. And I realized when I started my company, I looked around and I said, what makes a successful business? And those people were spending a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of investment into the professional development of their company and themselves. And I look and I see the same thing in nonprofits. They're bringing people in, right? They're bringing the highest level thinking that they can find in to really push them forward in a way that they couldn't have gotten themselves. And then they're seeing a lot of benefit from that investment.
Yes. You can't, I had another guest on a couple of weeks ago, or it was December. You can't be expert in everything, and there's no point in learning things
right.
You don't need to do what you're genius at.
Yeah.
You're wasting your time. You're taking time away from your genius.
Right. You think you're saving, but in the end, it's costing you a lot more.
We got about 30 seconds. Encourage us. Wrap it up and encourage.
Yes. So, you know, right now it's kind of a crazy time, you know, politically, and a lot of nonprofits are really kind of flipping into fear. Right. And so I'm going to encourage them to start scanning the world for the possibilities and the abundance around them and creating this brand of attraction so that they can keep that positive energy coming towards them. So that because all these types of our world is uncertain every day. So when we're certain of the direction we're going, we can cope with that a lot more easily.
Outstanding. You'll find her at mariannedersch.com. There's an E at the end of Marianne, and she's at Marianne Dersch. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Wonderful.
Absolutely. And for insiders, Marianne has time effectiveness tips that we're going to talk about. And plus, you're going to get to see the shoes. Next week, walks and runs with Emily Parks. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on tonymartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled. Tony.ma/Pursuant. By Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Telos Credit Card and Payment Processing, your passive revenue stream, Tony.ma/TonyTelos. And by Text to Give, mobile donations made easy, text NPR to 444-999. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio, Godwin. Together, we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
The The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.